to Historical Nerdery, the show that destroys the myths of the American Revolution, one podcast at a time. I am your head nerd, Alexander Kane. On today's episode, we take a deep dive into the world of the Massachusetts Minutemen on the eve of the American Revolution and discuss the role the town of Lexington played in the build-up to war with England. I hope you will join us today on Historical Nerdery. Let's get into the show. When war with England appeared to be inevitable, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress, the de facto government of Massachusetts Bay Colony that literally sprung up following England's passage of the Intolerable Acts, looked to the colony's militia system to serve as its military arm. The origins of the Massachusetts militia can be traced back to the reign of Edward I, when Parliament enacted legislation decreeing that every freeman between the ages of 15 and 60 was to be available to preserve the peace within his own county or shire. In the towns where the freemen were located, they were organized into military units known by the virtue of their periodic training. They were called trained bands. However, when Parliament, under the rule of Charles II, revised membership requirements and began to appoint officers, trained bands became known as militias. By the 17th century, militias had become one of the cornerstones of English society. Thus, when Plymouth and Massachusetts Bay colonies were founded in the 17th century, the establishment of the militia naturally followed. In both colonies, every man over the age of 16 automatically became a member. The governor maintained the sole authority to activate the militia in the time of a crisis. And as each time a new town sprung up in colonial Massachusetts, a militia company was formed. And as the towns expanded, additional companies were often created. And of course, when counties were formed and organized, the various town militias within the borders of each county were organized into county-level regiments. In the decades following the establishment of the initial English settlements in Massachusetts, the number of hostile encounters between the colonists and the French and Native Americans continually increased. To counter the ever-present threat of French and Native American attacks, Massachusetts created rapid response militia units that eventually evolved over time into what became known as Minutemen. For example, during King Philip's War, which took place between 1765 and 1766, Massachusetts ordered 100 men from each county regiment to be ready at an hour's warning and not to fail to be at the appointed rendezvous. With the outbreak of King George's War in 1745, militia commanders were again required to appoint a fraction of their men to be ready at a minute's warning to march to the enemy. When the French and Indian War started, Massachusetts continued to make use of the rapid response concept. Militia companies were required to single out particular men to be completely furnished with arms and ammunition and hold themselves in readiness to march at a minute's warning as service required. However, with the elimination of the French threat at the conclusion of the French and Indian War, the need for a militia decreased significantly. After 1763, companies and regiments of Massachusetts militia rarely assembled to drill, and as a result, were of little military value. By the eve of the Boston Tea Party, a militia muster was not viewed as a military gathering, but rather as a sort of town holiday offering an opportunity for families and friends and neighbors to get together. In the fall of 1774, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress correctly concluded that war with England was inevitable. As a result, it had to consider what is necessary to be done for the defense and safety of the province. The Provincial Congress also recognized the need to revitalize and further strengthen the colony's militia system as quickly as possible. To achieve this, it resolved to wrest control of the militia away from a group of loyalist officers who commanded it. The Provincial Congress first ordered the militias to meet forthwith and elect officers to command their respective companies, and that the officers so chosen assemble as soon as may be and proceed to elect field officers. On October 26, 1774, the delegates set into motion the formation of Minuteman companies within Massachusetts. Emphasis on proper military skill and logistical supply was strongly emphasized by the delegates. On the same day as the creation of the Minuteman companies, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress also resolved that as the security of the lives, liberties, and properties of the inhabitants of this province depends under Providence on their knowledge and skill in the art of military, it is therefore recommended that they immediately provide themselves therewith, that they use their utmost diligence to perfect themselves in military skill. Finally, the Congress voted to create a Committee of Safety, which according to the Provincial Congress would have the power to alarm and mobilize the militia and Minuteman companies of the colony. To support the logistical needs of the Committee of Safety, a sister company was created to gather such provisions as shall be necessary for the militia's reception and support until they shall be discharged by order of the Committee of Safety. 3 days later, on October 29, 1775, Provincial Congress addressed what appropriate military drill the various militia and Minuteman companies should adopt. It is possible that the delegates considered the Norfolk Exercise. The Norfolk Exercise was developed in England in 1757, and it was also called a Plan of Discipline composed for the use of the militia of the County of Norfolk. The Norfolk Exercise had been adopted by many New England militia companies by 1768 and was actually declared the official drill of the colony in the early 1770s. However, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress ordered that it be recommended to the inhabitants of this province that in order to their perfecting themselves in the military art, they proceed in the method ordered by His Majesty in the year 1764, it being, in the opinion of this Congress, best calculated for appearance and defense. The drill that was recommended by the Massachusetts Provincial Congress was known as the 1764 Crown Manual of Arms. This was the same drill that was used by the British troops stationed in Boston in 1774. Acting upon these instructions, the recently elected militia officers loyal to the Provincial Congress traveled throughout their respective counties recruiting Minutemen. Most towns had little or no problem finding men who were willing to fill the ranks of Minuteman companies. To ensure enlistments, many towns established a salary and reimbursement of expenses for those who joined the ranks of Minuteman companies. The town of Amesbury ordered each man shall have 1 shilling for exercising 4 hours in a fortnight, and that the commanding officer of said Minutemen shall exhibit an account of them that shall exercise to the selectmen for to receive their pay for exercising. 2 weeks later, the town amended its resolution to include that each Minuteman shall have $2 bounty paid them at their first marching. The town of Haverhill established that its Minutemen be allowed for each half day of drilling 8 pence till the middle of March next, and 1 shilling for each half day afterwards, until they are called out to actual service from home or disbanded. The town of Andover resolved that its Minutemen would receive 8 pence for each half day they shall be exercised in the art of military, and from the 30th day of March to the 30th day of September, 1 shilling for each half day that they shall be exercised. And in the case each soldier shall have been called to active service, 36 shillings per month. The neighboring town of Bradford voted to give each man $1 for billeting when they are called to march, and $7 per month while in actual service. Despite popular misconceptions, Massachusetts Minutemen and militiamen were not poorly armed and equipped. Instead, it appears most towns took appropriate steps to ensure its minute companies were well supplied for war. Shortly after the founding of Massachusetts Bay Colony, the colonial government drafted and issued a series of laws outlining the requirements and expectations of each militiaman. These laws defined what constituted a military emergency, when a militia company should mobilize, and it outlined what a civilian soldier was expected to carry for arms and equipment on a military campaign. Musters and military training were frequent and mandatory, and criminal penalties in the form of fines and corporal punishment were doled out for being absent or not properly equipped. When the Massachusetts Provincial Congress passed its resolutions in the fall of 1774, these resolves did not alter the old militia acts. Rather, the recommendations encouraged a revitalization of the defensive military system that worked within the colony's existing militia framework. As tensions between the army in Boston and colonists continued to escalate, Massachusetts towns began to issue their own detailed resolutions that often expanded upon or added to what a militiaman or minuteman should carry in the time of a military emergency. For example, on December 26, 1774, Roxbury ordered militia and minutemen to hold themselves in readiness at a minute's warning, complete in arms and ammunition. That is to say, a good and sufficient firelock, a bayonet, 30 rounds of powder and ball, pouch and knapsack. The following month, Braintree required each soldier to furnish himself with a good firelock, bayonet, cartouche box, 1 pound of powder, 24 balls to fit their guns, 12 flints, and a knapsack. In Bridgewater, it was expected each soldier to provide himself with a good firearm, a steel or iron ramrod, and a spring for the same, a worm, a priming wire and brush, a bayonet fitted to his gun, a scabbard and belt thereof, a cutting sword or tomahawk or hatchet, a cartridge box holding 15 rounds at least, and 100 buckshot, 6 flints, 1 pound of powder, 40 leaden balls fitted to the gun, a knapsack and blanket, and a canteen or wooden bottle to hold 1 quart of water. Finally, on October 24, 1774, the town of Newburyport resolved to protect and preserve the rights and privileges granted and guaranteed by the Charter of the Province, voted that all the inhabitants of this town be desired to furnish themselves with arms and ammunition according to law, and that they have also bayonets fixed to their guns as soon as may be. Militia and Minutemen obtained their firearms from a variety of sources. These sources included fowling pieces, imported muskets sold by local merchants, muskets and equipment captured from enemy troops, most notably the French and Spanish, locally produced weapons, stands of arms issued by the British government to the Massachusetts provincial and militia soldiers during the French and Indian War, and finally, the rare procurement of a musket from a willing British soldier stationed in Boston. Thus, it was not uncommon to observe within the same militia company fowlers, 1742 King's Pattern muskets, often and erroneously referred to as the first model Brown Bess, Dutch muskets, Spanish muskets, American composite muskets with parts obtained from several sources, and French muskets. The makeup of muskets within the ranks of the Lexington Company was no different. An archaeological survey of the Parker's Revenge battle site inside Minuteman National Historic Park yielded several small caliber musket balls of American origin. The size of these balls suggests many of the Lexington men were firing a variety of fowling or hunting guns as the retreating British column passed their position as they retreated to Boston. Recent research has also revealed the popular assumption that militia and Minutemen of Massachusetts carried their ammunition and gear in various individualistic ways is actually incorrect. Instead, it appears most towns undertook a variety of steps to ensure its minute and militia companies were somewhat uniformly armed with belting, bayonets, knapsacks, and cartridge boxes. Many towns, including Concord, Lincoln, and Acton, developed a cottage industry and paid its saddlers to make cartridge boxes, scabbards, and belting for its minute and militia companies. In Lexington, Jonathan Harrington, the father of the company Pfeiffer, and Philip Russell were hired to make cartridge boxes made out of moose skin. The most common type of cartridge box constructed on the eve of the American Revolution by Massachusetts militia companies consisted of a soft leather pouch that was shaped like the letter D and had a wooden block inserted inside of the pouch to hold between 15 and 19 rounds of ammunition. Bayonets were scarce in Massachusetts, and the colony's militiamen were not as well equipped as their British counterparts. The bayonet was an offensive tool, with the dual purpose of serving as a weapon during close-quarter combat and, at the same time, instilling shock and awe in the enemy. The origins of the bayonet can be traced back to 17th century France. The first recorded military use of this weapon was by the French army in 1642. 20 years later, the British army also adopted bayonets. The early version was known as the plug bayonet, a dagger having a tapered handle for insertion into the muzzle of a soldier's musket. However, the plug bayonet had its limitations. Most notably, soldiers could not fire their muskets when the bayonet was inserted in the muzzle. By 1720, both England and France adopted the socket bayonet. The socket bayonet slipped over the barrel of a musket and remained in use throughout the American Revolution. Historically, Massachusetts militiamen were very reluctant to adopt this important weapon. In his work, Swords and Blades of the American Revolution, the late George Newman correctly argued, when the bayonet gained acceptance throughout Europe in the late 1600s, the Americans apparently used it sparingly. Specifications by most colonies for their militia continued to stress swords and hatchets as the recommended sidearms. Bayonets appear to have finally begun to receive official endorsement during the 1740s, but even then only as an elective alternative to the sword or hatchet. Naturally, this begs the question, why was the bayonet in short supply in 18th century Massachusetts? It appears two factors influenced this condition, economics and governmental policy. In regard to the former, many gunsmiths and shop owners actually elected not to sell bayonets to their customers. Although business choices severely limited a militiaman's access to the bayonet, early government policy also discouraged the use of this weapon. It was not until 1757 that the Massachusetts General Court finally started to broadly encourage the adoption of bayonets and passed a law ordering that half of the men enlisted in the colony's militia companies be issued bayonets at the expense of the government. However, in 1774, there was still a shortage of bayonets. Massachusetts militia and Minuteman companies scrambled to find suitable bayonets or make them. On October 25, 1774, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress ordered 5,000 bayonets to be produced. In Lexington, the residents placed a heavy emphasis on complying with this order, and they resolved during a town meeting, upon request of the number of the inhabitants, to see if the town will call for those bayonets that were provided for part of the training soldiers, and that the remainder of the soldiers may be provided with bayonets at the expense of the town, to be returnable when called for, and that those persons that have purchased bayonets at their own cost may be paid for them by the town at the price the others cost the town. Unfortunately, the lack of bayonets continued through the early years of the American Revolution. An April 1775 return to the Provincial Congress indicated that only 10,108 bayonets existed for 21,549 muskets. The following year, an inspection of a Bristol County militia regiment revealed that there were only 175 bayonets available for 446 muskets. Of course, when bayonets could not be acquired, many militia companies countered the deficiency by using other edged weapons, such as cutlasses, hangers, and hatchets. Militia and Minutemen varied little in other equipment as well. Most militiamen used a single-pouch, double-strapped knapsack consisted of heavy linen or hemp canvas. Many militiamen, if not all, utilized blankets that were tied directly to their packs or carried on a hemp linen or leather tump line or strap. Thus, when Massachusetts Minute and Militiamen companies mobilized on April 19, 1775, they were fully armed and equipped for war. According to an official report from a British officer present at the Battle of Lexington, he noted that Captain John Parker's company fielded universally with arms and accoutrements. Similarly, in 1847, a mass grave containing several Massachusetts militiamen killed in the fight at Menotomy on April 19, 1775, was opened. An eyewitness noticed that the men were all buried with their knapsacks on. Included within this military world of the Massachusetts Bay Colony militia system was Lexington. Despite popular belief, Lexington's militia was not known in 1775 as the Lexington Minutemen. In the fall of 1774, Lexington had begun to take steps to establish a Minuteman company. However, such a company was never officially formed. Thus, on April 19, 1775, Lexington only had militiamen within its ranks. In short, the Lexington Minutemen never existed. The militia company was known as the Lexington Training Band, or Captain John Parker's Company. Official period documents from the town suggest the unit was officially known as the Training Band, and its soldiers were called Training Soldiers. However, depositions from Lexington militiamen in the aftermath of the Battle of Lexington refer to their town militia not as the Lexington Training Band, but as Captain Parker's Company. It is possible, of course, that both unit designations were used by the residents of Lexington interchangeably. Lexington's militia company consisted of 130 men, along with four officers, seven non-commissioned officers, one clerk, one fifer, and one drummer. Six of the town's families furnished a total of 29 men. The oldest militiaman was 63 years old, while the youngest was just a mere 14 years of age. 55 men were over the age of 30, and only 28 had seen combat previously during the two French wars, King George's War and the French and Indian War. Complying with tradition, the Lexington Training Band elected its officers. In command of the unit on the eve of the Battle of Lexington was Captain John Parker, a 46-year-old, large-frame man consumed by tuberculosis. His second in command was 38-year-old Lieutenant William Tidd. Serving as the training band's first ensign was 63-year-old Robert Monroe. Unlike his two superior officers, he was a veteran of both the Siege of Louisbourg in 1745 and the French and Indian War. The other company ensign was Joseph Simons, and the clerk was Daniel Harrington. William Monroe, the young proprietor of Monroe's Tavern, served as the company orderly sergeant, while Francis Brown and Ebenezer White also held the ranks of sergeant. Four corporals were also elected by the company: Joel Viles, Samuel Sanderson, John Monroe, and Ebenezer Parker. 6 weeks before the October 26, 1774 resolution by the Massachusetts Provincial Congress calling for wartime preparation, the Lexington militia was already training and showing arms. On September 26, 1774, Lexington voted to provide a pair of drums for the use of the military company in town. On November 3, 1774, the town gathered to plan military discipline and to put themselves in a position of defense against their enemies. The next week, the residents resolved to acquire a variety of military supplies, voted that 2 half-barrels of powder be added to the town's stock, also voted that a sufficiency of ball for said powder be provided. Voted, that there be a suitable quantity of flints provided to the town if there be found a deficiency. On December 27, 1774, the residents voted to form a committee that would oversee measures to ensure the militia was prepared for war. Voted, that 7 persons be appointed as a committee of inspection to see that the plans of the provincial Congress are faithfully carried into execution. Over the next several months, it appears that this committee, under the leadership of Captain John Parker, took steps to ensure the company was properly armed and equipped. Lexington even took steps to successfully acquire an artillery piece. In late 1774, Massachusetts residents were scrambling to obtain cannons. Some of the guns, mostly iron cannons, were taken from coastal defenses around Boston and sent to Watertown. While there, 2 of the guns caught the attention of Lexington. Its residents quickly pressed the selectmen to acquire the pair for the town. A week later, the town approved the purchase of the 2 cannons, voted to bring the 2 pieces of cannon mentioned in the warrant from Watertown and mount them. After approving the purchase of the 2 cannons in true Yankee fashion, the residents of Lexington voted to create a committee to explore the cheapest method of mounting the guns on carriages and building ammunition boxes. At some point after November 28, 1774, the town received the 2 guns from Watertown, and it appears by February of 1775, the 2 cannons were mounted on carriages, and Thomas Robbins of Lexington was already making ammunition for the guns. The men of Lexington were constantly drilling. According to the Reverend Jonas Clark's diary, the Lexington militia were training and showing arms as early as September 15, 1774. Other dates Clark records the militia drilling are October 5, 1774, and March 13, 1775. Town records also confirm that the company was drilling throughout the month of December as well. According to an early 19th century deposition by William Tidd, said company frequently met for exercise, the better to be prepared for defense. Likewise, John Monroe recalled, "The company was frequently called out for exercise and desired to furnish ourselves with arms and ammunition and to be in constant readiness for action." Lexington's militia did possess several advantages on the eve of the American Revolution. The town had a sufficient stock of arms, ammunition, and gunpowder. Every member of the Lexington training band was familiar with the surrounding countryside and knew the locations that offered military advantages over their British counterparts. Over half the militia resided close enough to the village common to assemble on short notice. Lexington also had several residents who owned fast horses and could serve as scouts and alarm riders. However, men of Lexington would need every one of these advantages should they be forced to confront the regulars if and when His Majesty's forces decided to march out from Boston. I hope you have enjoyed today's episode of Historical Nerdery. To learn more about the battles of Lexington and Concord, as well as other neat information about revolutionary New England, be sure to check out my website, historicalnerdery.com, follow me on Facebook and Instagram, and subscribe to my mailing list. I'm Alex Kane, and this has been Historical Nerdery.